Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're going to, among other questions, answer this question. What is the conservative answer to climate change? We're going to be talking with former Republican Congressman Bob Inglis. He is with a group now called Republic EN. You can find them at republicen.org. Bob Inglis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom. Great to be with you.
So right now, we're recording this, you are in Utah. Tell me what's going to be happening here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here for a couple of Rotary Club presentations and an event at Utah Valley University. And Utah is one of our target states, along with Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, Indiana, Iowa. There are reasons for all those, but in case of Utah, it's the fact that we really see some leadership here on clean energy, and we think that there's a real opportunity to have that spread across the country.
Yeah, former Congressman, now Senator John Curtis, has been leading out on this, right? A conservative climate caucus, I think, is his organization.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he's, now that he's in the Senate, I'm not sure if he's still, I don't know what he's up to with climate these days.
Oh, yeah, he's been a key voice, really. In fact, I was just hearing earlier this morning at Utah Clean Energy about how Senator Curtis was instrumental in the big bill that was passed, keeping some of the incentives in place that make it so that the solar and wind industry aren't just kaput. Key role that he played. And of course, as you're mentioning, Tom, he created the Conservative Climate Caucus when he was in the House. It's actually one of the biggest caucuses in the House. Who would have thunk that would happen? But that was John's doing. And so we're a huge fan of all that work.
So I'd like to get a little bit of your background for people who don't know. I was on Republic EN, and there's an Instagram post, a little Instagram post. You were telling us about some of your history. You were a Republican congressman, served several terms in South Carolina, of course, a very conservative place, right? And at a certain point, you decided you were going to start speaking about climate. That didn't go so well politically for you, but now you've launched onto this path. Tell me a little bit about your background.
It's like this. I was in Congress 6 years saying that climate change was nonsense. I didn't know anything about it except that Al Gore was for it. So that was pretty ignorant, but that's the way it was my first 6 years in Congress. That was 92 to 98. And then I had an unsuccessful Senate race in 1998, returned to the practice of commercial real estate law in Greenville, South Carolina, and then had the opportunity to run for the same seat again in 2004. So it's Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina. You know, South Carolina is a triangle. We're two points in the ocean and then an inland point. So we are the inland point. And that year, our son came to me, since he was voting the first time, having just turned 18, the eldest of our five kids. He said to me, "Dad, I'll vote for you, but you're going to clean up your act on the environment." His four sisters agreed. His mother agreed. That's an important constituency to respond to, you know. So it can change the locks on the doors to your house. So that was step one of a three-step metamorphosis. Step two is going to Antarctica with the science committee, seeing the evidence in the ice core drillings. And then step three, another science committee trip, and really a spiritual awakening at the Great Barrier Reef. Seems unlikely, right, to have a spiritual awakening on a godless science committee trip, because we all know that all scientists are godless. Apparently not. This Aussie climate scientist who was showing me the glories of the Great Barrier Reef as we snorkeled together, I could see was clearly worshiping God. St. Francis of Assisi is quoted as saying, "Preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words." And so Scott, this guy, Scott Heron is his name, he's become now a very dear friend, was doing just that. And that got me going. I thought, I want to be like Scott, loving God and loving people. So I came home and introduced what we see as a conservative answer to climate change. Probably not the best political timing. It was a great recession, and people were happy to hear from many other Republicans that we don't need to worry about that, that climate change thing. So I was out of step and got tossed out of Congress in June of 2010. And so ever since, I've been doing this thing, RepublicEan.org. We're out to convince conservatives to get in the conversation, because we think that it's actually uniquely suited to a conservative perspective. And so that's what we're trying to do at RepublicEan.org.
So I want to get into that, uniquely suited to a conservative perspective. But I wonder, you mentioned Congressman Curtis formed this Congressional Climate Caucus, became one of the largest ones. There are Republicans out there active on climate change. But from 2004 to now, have you seen a shift at all? I think I still hear Republicans and conservatives saying there is no human-caused climate change, right? It's still a segment of your party and of conservatives who are still there.
Yeah, it's true. We're not quite there yet in terms of it's a building year, Coach. That's what you say. We're not winning just yet, right? So, but it is incredibly better than it was when I was getting tossed out in June of 2010. You know, back then, it was aggressive disbelief about climate change. Basically, I don't believe in climate change. You shouldn't either. That was a great recession. You know, I speak to a lot of colleges and such, and now I need to ask them, do you remember about the Great Recession? Answer, no, because they were like 4 years old. So I say, well, it was a really bad time in the economy. Banks are failing. Things are really bad. And that was then, you know, it was basically, we don't need to worry about that. And my political problem at that moment was, you know, it looked like I was dealing with a long-term cancer when we had hemorrhaging going on, you know, in the housing industry and banks and analysts. Come back later about that long-term cancer problem and give us a tourniquet, you know. And so that was 2010. Then, since then, though, now people are not arguing so much, Tom, about the existence of climate change. Some people still argue with thermometers. I mean, it's a thing, you know. you can try that, but it doesn't work too well. But most people now, the legitimate question that's being asked in the right of center constituencies that we're trying to reach is, yeah, it's obviously real, but how do you get the world in on this thing? That's the hard part. And so that's where we think there's an answer. And that's the question that we've got to answer right now among fellow conservatives.
Let's jump in the conservative case for climate change action. And on your website, you list three methods of combating climate change that are they're usually spoken of: regulating, incentivizing, or pricing. You come down on pricing, but tell me first about regulating and incentivizing and where you are on those.
Yeah, so, you know, there really are three ways to fix it, and that's what you're seeing on our website there. And it sounds like maybe some listeners are thinking, wait a minute, only three ways? Well, generally speaking, it's three buckets. You can either regulate emissions, or you can incentivize clean energy, or you can price in the negative effects of burning fossil fuels. So the first is regulation. That would work here in America. You could, in fairness to people who like the regulatory solution, it would work. You could have the EPA regulate CO2 emissions. You could bring down those emissions. And in the process, you'd do some good stuff. You would clean up the local air. You would make it so that fewer asthma cases, longer life expectancy. It really pretty great here in America. Problem: you can't regulate Chinese emissions from here in America. And so that makes it a non-starter, seems to us, because and as you can imagine, it's sitting under a sign called RepublicEan.org. I don't exactly cotton to regulations, but even if that weren't our orientation at RepublicEan.org, that lack of the ability to get China in is the problem. And so, because if you regulate here and they don't regulate there, well, manufacturers may pick up and move from here to there because they don't have to pay for emissions there or aren't regulated there. So the result is you just went downhill in solving climate change because we actually would emit more in exporting that production because we're way more energy efficient here in America than they are in China. So a second approach is to incentivize clean energy. And if I were still in Congress, I'd be voting for some of these things. And it's what Senator John Curtis was just successful in keeping some of those in place so that the wind and solar industry wasn't totally decimated. And I'd be voting for some of those things and doing what Senator Curtis is doing there. There is a weakness to it, and that is those incentives apply to American taxpaying firms. Chinese firms don't pay American taxes. So they haven't affected their economics. And so therefore, that may end up in the same spot as the regulatory solution, which is you've accomplished the cleaning of local air, but you haven't gotten the world in, so you're not solving climate change yet, because the devilish problem about climate change is emissions anywhere, climate change everywhere. So you got to get the world in. So obviously we favored the third one, having politely dissed the regulatory solution and the clean energy solution. And that is just to charge a tipping fee for dumping into the trash dump of the sky. You know, I haven't looked into it, but I am certain here in Salt Lake City that if I were endless trash hauling, I'd have to pay a tipping fee for the trash that I take to the dump based on the weight of my trucks going into the dump. Makes sense. Because, you know, once I fill up the dump with all my customers' trash, the taxpayers here are going to have to build a new dump. So charge me for the space I'm taking up. We think that's basically the solution to climate change, is just charge for dumping into the trash dump of the sky. The actual damages, in other words, try to figure out what is the harm of the next ton of CO2 that's emitted. That's a big debate about what would be that economic harm. But right now we got it set at zero, and there's a lot of dumping.
Yeah.
So how about we put a price on it? And then here's the key: if you have that in place here in America, you can apply it to imports. So it makes it in the interest of the Chinese and every other country in the world that's shipping stuff to us to collect that fee themselves to fund their governments rather than to fork it over to the United States on entry into of their goods into the United States. So the result is that you could get 8 billion people to start seeing the true cost of burning fossil fuels because it's built into the price of everything. Now, Tom, here's the problem. Here's a big challenge with that. Englis for Congress, he wants the price of everything in your life to go up. Okay, that's not working too well just yet. You know, that's because that is the case. The price of things would go up to there. It'd be because the things that I'm wearing right now, the phone that I'm using, the things that the things all around us would go up in price because they would have their true cost attached to them. So what we got to do about that is we got to figure out a way to make it so we can afford it. So how about, since that revenue coming into the government now is from carbon taxes, how about we cut taxes somewhere else on income? Now we're talking. And now we're talking a conservative line, which is let's cut payroll taxes especially, because payroll taxes really punish work. There's somebody working at McDonald's near where I am right now, maybe her second or third job, and she's paying 12.4% payroll taxes, half that she sees, half that McDonald's pays. Cut that tax. Put on a carbon tax instead. Congressional Budget Office says the bottom 70% of Americans end up better off in that tax swap. And so, Tom, here's the big question is, can we trust ourselves to change what we tax? And I got to tell you, that is our huge challenge at RepublicEan.org, is getting people to basically trust ourselves that, you know, we can decide what we want to tax. Mm. And sometimes I tell people, you know, if I see continuing skepticism about that, I say, well, now listen, if we can't decide what we're going to tax, okay, somebody get a phone and let's call King Charles and let's apologize for what happened back there in 1776. And let's invite him back to rule over us because we really, self-government has failed. I'm not ready to make that call. And I don't think many people in America are. So let's trust ourselves and decide. We can decide what to tax. And then fix the economics, because that's the whole thing we think about at Republican.org, is this is a problem of economics has an environmental consequence. Just fix the economics. And that, we think, is rock-solid conservatism. Happens to be acceptable, by the way, to a lot of progressives, too. And that's, you know, I asked Al Gore several years ago if I could keep on saying that what we're for in this tax swap, cut taxes on income, payroll taxes especially, put a tax on carbon emissions, apply it at the borders. I said, you know, I go around saying that it's the same thing you've been for, Vice President Gore, for the last 30 years. He said, well, hold up, Bob, if you're talking a low, and I said, no, sir, I'm talking a substantial carbon tax, it's steadily rising, applied to imports as well. And he says, yeah, fine then. You can tell people what you're for at republican.org is the same thing I've been for about 30 years. So our ultimate goal is to bring America together and lead the world to solutions.
So this would be critical reduction of taxes in other areas, right? Because I've been reading a few articles about the recent elections, right? The off-year elections. Energy affordability was a big part of that. So here's an opportunity, but if you're instituting a carbon tax, the energy price is going to go up, aren't they? So I guess you'd have to offset that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing, and that is where the trust factor comes in, and that's what we really are in a low trust environment. It's generally a challenge for our whole republic, right? And it surely is true in this area of fixing climate change. Is can we trust ourselves? Can we decide what to tax and what to untax? Of course, another way to fix that problem of, you know, the affordability is to do what our friends at Citizens Climate Lobby want to do. And I'm full disclosure, I'm on the board of Citizens Climate Education. So that proposal is to dividend the money from the carbon tax back to the citizenry. That's another way to fix that problem of affordability, because, you know, people in Alaska like getting that Alaska Permanent Fund check from the oil revenues. Same thing would be the case here. Is you, if you had a carbon tax, you could dividend the money back to American citizens, so they'd be getting a check. That would make it affordable. And so the whole idea is to just somehow make it so we have a tipping fee for jumping into the trash dump of the sky, but make it affordable by either dividending the money back or by cutting payroll taxes or some other kind of tax, so that you don't have no growth of government. And that's what we need conservatives to focus on, no growth of government. There's a small government way to do this. And surprise, it's the same thing that Al Gore's been for about 30 years.
You're listening to Access Utah. Tom Williams with you. I'm talking this hour with Bob Inglis, who is Executive Director of Republic EN, and we're answering the question, what is the conservative answer to climate change? We'll have much more with my conversation with Bob Inglis after a brief break, and once we tell you that we are here today, I'm with Nick Porath, our engineer. Nick, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I haven't been on here on Access Utah for a while, so it's good to be here.
And it's a great special occasion here. We're wishing you happy holiday season. Thank you so much. And it's the UPR's year-end fund drive right now. We're asking for your support as we close out another great year on the air. So you can help us prepare for 2026 by making a charitable contribution right now at upr.org.
That's right, upr.org. The listener support we've experienced since losing federal funding earlier this year has been tremendous. Thank you so much for all that support. And you helped us get on the good foot, and we've been able to get on a good foot, be able to look forward and say, okay, we can do this. We're going to make it. However, we need to stay on that good foot. We want to be able to stay on that good foot and continue to provide the programming we provide, the news we provide, and everything that we're able to do. And we're able to do that because of your support. And with this sustaining support that we're looking to get for this quick little drive we're doing, it's just going to help us get to a good place, get to a good start for 2026. You know, so we can know that we're at a good spot. We can continue where we are with our current budget, not have to get rid of programs and, you know, make big changes.
So we hope that Access Utah is part of your regular listening habits. Probably is. You're listening right now. So that's just part of the local program that we provide here at Utah Public Radio, which would also include Both Sides of the Aisle, which we recently gave an extra airing on Friday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Undisciplined, another great program. We've got Behind the Headlines, Wild About Utah. The list goes on and on. Some great local programs. Those are among the most expensive programs, and we know that those are some of the programs that you appreciate the most, and so we're committed to continuing those. But now that federal funding for public radio is gone forever, we assume forever, we're 100% reliant on you, the community. So we're asking you to make a year-end gift to fortify UPR. So you probably participated in the emergency drive, right? Probably participated in the fall drive. Now we're coming to you again, but the need is great, and we're asking for just a little bit, if you can, to help UPR be sustainable.
That's right. Every little bit helps. That's the thing, is if everyone gives even just a little bit, that's enough to help us keep going. And, you know, the best way you can help us replace the ongoing loss of funding and, you know, all of these challenges is to, you know, help us, like I said, stay on this good foot. And by donating today, you're joining a movement that'll help build longevity and sustainability and allow us to continue into 2026 with, you know, the continued programs and news that we provide. We don't want to have to be able to make big changes. And, you know, we've already had to make some changes to make adjustments, but we'd like to be able to continue what we're doing because we know that that's what you're supporting when you give to Utah Public Radio. So we want to keep doing it as well. You can go to upr.org or call 800-826-1495. We've also got the phone lines open to do that today as well. So
we've been thinking recently of a metaphor. So UPR is a house. So we had a hole blown into our roof when we lost our federal funds. But thanks to your amazing support, we've been able to patch that hole. So that emergency may have passed. Well, there's still a mortgage that needs to be paid every month. And so the long-term solution is sustainability, right? Is those extra funds, and that's what we're trying to accomplish right now.
That's right. It's going to be – it's been an interesting year, and looking ahead, you've given us hope. And looking into 2026, I've got hope as well because of the support that you provided. And, you know, like we said, every little bit helps, and you've helped us get on a good foot, and this is to help us stay on that good foot. So, again, you can call 800-826-1495, or you can head to upr.org. We've also, if you're here in Logan, we've got a little a gift room available. It's the gift closet. The room isn't a closet. It's items from the gift closet. But you can come in, enjoy some cocoa, see some drive gifts from years past, and, you know, maybe get something from the UPR archive.
We've got the UPR's famous art contest mugs, not just the latest one, mm-hmm. over the years, right? You got the lime green UPR fanny pack. Got those great hats that were part of the last fall's drive. Last fall, I guess, just a couple of months ago, right?
Yeah.
but so many other things that you may have wanted in the past, here's your opportunity again.
There's even a few hats from the 2023 drive as well. I think there's a 70, is that the 70-year anniversary hat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So any
there's
of those,
a few of those
or
as
a pledge
well.
Of $10 a month, which is great, $120 for the year, that'll help out a lot. So upr.org is the place you go, upr.org.
Plus, we just love to see you. We love when we have visitors. We love when you come up to the station. So again, we encourage you, if you're in the area, you can check it out, or you can also check out, I think there's a picture on the social media. You can see some of the items that are there in the shop as well if you're in a different part of the state. And, you can help us stay on the good foot that you've helped us get on.
So thank you so much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And if you can, we're asking you to give a little more to help make UPR sustainable here at the end of the year. UPR.org, place to go, UPR.org. And thank you. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Bob Inglis. He's a former Republican congressman from South Carolina. He's currently executive director of an organization called Republic EN. And we're answering the question, what is the conservative answer to climate change? Of course, as we've been talking with Bob Inglis, their answer in Maine is a carbon tax. And that carbon tax, their proposal is carbon tax would be border adjustable, meaning that the carbon tax imposes a fee on imports from countries that don't have a comparable price on carbon pollution. So here's the next part of my conversation with Bob Inglis. So border adjustable taxes, and you say that's the only way we can do this get the other nations to participate as well. But wouldn't there potentially be reciprocal border adjustments? Wouldn't this be tit for tat? We're seeing those with the tariff war, right, the trade war.
Oh, yeah. And the way that economists would tell would say well, their answer to that would be is you want it to be reciprocal. You want it to be that what happens is we would apply a tax to products made here in America. They would be removed on export and then imposed on import into that other country. That's the economically pure way to do it. Because then, but here's the thing. I think that there's a diplomatic way to avoid all that accounting, and that is to say, listen, we've got agreements that we're going to charge a fee on carbon emissions, and this is what we're gonna. Once if you've got it in your country, then you don't have to pay on entry into ours because we see that you've already. You've already attached that cost to the product. This, Tom, is what we're about to find out. We're about to be taught about this by Europe. You know, since 2023, take a manufacturer of steel in South Carolina, Nucor Steel. If they're exporting something into Europe, since 2023, they've been having to report how many emissions there are on those products. But starting next year, next month, they have to start buying European carbon credits, essentially paying a carbon tax to the Europeans. I think that eventually American members of Congress are going to say, hey, you know, why don't we collect that? And then the carbon border adjustment going into Europe would mean that the money is here, not there on that carbon tax. And so I think the light bulbs are going to start going on in the U.S. Capitol. And the big one on the top of the Capitol will go on when we figure out, oh, you could do that to China. And here's the thing. You see, if we acted that way, I'm talking, there is some diplomacy that would help make it so that it's easier to administer. But in the meantime, the big moving thing of just saying, hey, we're ready to act here in America on climate. And China, you're going to find it in your interest to pay. Or to do the same thing, you're going to find it in your interest to collect a carbon tax internal to China. Because otherwise, they're going to be paying our tax on entry here, and it's going to be funding our government. Governments everywhere want money for their own government. And so they're going to follow suit. And here, the great important thing for conservatives to hear is no international agreement, no bowing and scraping at the UN, no protracted negotiations. Just a bold move by the United States that says, we're ready to act. And China, you're going to find it in your interest to do the same thing. Hey, if you don't want to do that, go ahead and pay our carbon tax, because we've got a terrible debt and an awful deficit, and we could sure use the money. So keep up. But I think they're going to find it in their interest to collect it themselves.
Has this kind of a carbon tax been tried anywhere else over a long period of time? Do we have any experience with this that can maybe lend credence to this?
Interesting enough, and somewhat embarrassing to tell you the truth, Tom, because there are a number of countries that are doing this, including countries like Brazil. So they're actually leading the way on this. Brazil, the European Union, they have a price on carbon dioxide. They are doing carbon border adjustment mechanisms. The United States, my country, is the country that should be leading this. It's quite embarrassing to me nothing wrong with, Brazil's a fine place, I'm sure, and European Union's fine, but really, we've got a role in the world as the most prosperous economy in the world, and we really should be leading this. And that's why we exist at RepublicEan.org, because the reality is it ain't going to happen without conservatives. And so we need conservatives to hear it in their own language and to realize that, hey, we got a solution. Yes, we do. We got a solution. How about you? Remember the cheer in middle school across the gym in Spirit Week. And so that's what we need them to sort of overcome their undeserved inferiority complex. They apparently think they're no good when it comes to energy and climate. They're very good. They got the answer. It's fix the economics.
Mm-hmm. I guess this would depend on how much the carbon tax is, but give me some specifics on what we think this would increase the average household energy budget, or maybe, and gas, for example.
Yeah. So, for example, if you put on a $30 per price on carbon dioxide. So if you go to the less than 2,000 companies in the United States that either mine coal or put stuff in a pipeline, and you say to them, we know from the chemical equation here how much CO2 is going to be emitted when that stuff is burned, and so we've just applied a tax. Very small job for the IRS, right? 2,000 taxpayers, that's a very small job for the IRS. They apply the tax. $30 a ton would mean that the price of gasoline in Salt Lake City or Greenville, South Carolina, where I live, we go up by 30 cents a gallon, typically. If it was a $40 per ton price on carbon dioxide, it'd go up by 40 cents a gallon. If it was $100 a ton, it'd go up by about $1 a gallon. That's pretty rough, right? And then the price of electricity in the average home would go up by $11 a month for that $30 per ton price on carbon dioxide. That's why we've got to cut taxes somewhere else or dividend the money back so that it can be afforded. But once you either cut payroll taxes, for example, so that person working their second or third job at McDonald's right now, they need to be able to afford that gasoline, and they need to be able to afford the $11 a month average increase in the price of electricity in their home. But you can do things to avoid the carbon tax. Turn down the thermostat. Put plastic on the windows in the winter. You can drive less. You can do some things. And that is exactly the behavior that you want to incentivize. Is you save energy, you save money. And you also clean up the air and deal with the winter inversion challenge here in Utah. That, by the way, Tom, is one of the reasons we think Utah is so key to this, is that no matter where you live in Utah, you're concerned about the winter air. And you realize, well, we need the whole world in on the kind of innovation that could make it that we're burning less or else sequestering it or something. We're doing something that cleans up that air.
So I'm looking, by the way, for folks, I guess you could play along. I'm on RepublicEan.org, and I'm over on the FAQ, which has some very good questions, which I'll pose to you, Bob Inglis. What about cap and trade? That's been suggested, I think, tried a few places, kind of a variation on this theme.
Yeah, and I think most economists would say there's not a dime's worth of difference between a well-designed carbon tax and a well-designed cap-and-trade system. And I can agree with that. But as a recovering politician, I can tell you it's harder to explain a cap-and-trade system than it is to explain a simple carbon tax. It is hard to get acceptance of a carbon tax because you got to trust me that I'm going to cut your taxes somewhere else. Trust me, that's the political problem there. But the additional problem of the cap and trade system is explaining it. And I did some sophisticated market research on that, by the way, Tom, when it was pending in Congress and I was there, and before I introduced the alternative to it, which is this thing I'm talking about here today, I sat with my parents who were in their mid-80s at the time. My dad was a retired industrial engineer. I sat at the kitchen table and I explained cap and trade to him. At the end of my presentation, my dad said to me, "Bob, that won't work." And I decided that if I couldn't convince these two people who love me very much to listen to the idea, I probably couldn't convince constituents. So I had to find something different. And so carbon tax, I think, is simpler and easier to explain.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. My guest for the hour today is Bob Inglis. He is a former Republican congressman from South Carolina, current executive director of Republican EN. You can find them at RepublicanEN.org, and we're answering the question, what is the conservative answer to climate change? We'll have the final part of my conversation with Bob Inglis following a brief break. Right now, just to remind you that we're in day one of a three-day, just brief fun drive here at the end of the calendar year, and I'm here with our engineer, Nick Porath. Nick, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me today, Tom. It's good to be here. It's good to be on the foot that we're on. Thanks to all our listeners out there who've helped us in the last few drives during this uncertain kind of spooky year. And this is to ensure that the future is not going to be so spooky. And it's honestly not thanks to your support.
You've really stepped up. Thank you so much. We appreciate it so much. During this season of giving, though, we all want to support organizations that need our money, and we'll use it to make a positive difference in our community. There are many such organizations, and we hope for you at least. Utah Public Radio checks those boxes, and we're in that mix, and we're frankly looking for a little bit more of your money to help make UPR sustainable going into the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were kind of in a few months ago during right before our fall drive, we were kind of unsure of how things were going to look, what the things we were going to able to continue on doing that we have been doing. And after that, you've showed us, okay, we have support, we've got that community, and we can, be able to continue this. Now, this is to allow us to continue this into 2026 because, we still have a lot to operate. This is, again, we want to emphasize this is to sustain us and allow us to continue. You've helped us get to a good spot, and we want to stay at that good spot. We don't want to have to cut programs. We don't want to have to make big changes, and we're able to do what we do because of your support.
So UPR is here every day for you, 24/7. We're anchoring you with the local coverage of climate issues like we're talking about today on Access Utah, water issues, Great Salt Lake, the ongoing redistricting battle. It seems like we've been doing nothing but redistricting with Robert Gerke, for example, on Behind the Headlines. Homelessness and many more topics. If it's important to you, we hope that you can find that treated in a respectful, long-form reporting way here on Utah Public Radio. So we've relied on our current members for financial support that's funded all of this news coverage, all of these programs like Access Utah, over this last year. And now with loss for federal funding, monthly support from listeners has become even more important. That's a big thing, Nick. Monthly support, that really, really helps. If you can become a sustainer, set that up as automatic, becomes monthly, then we know what we can rely on going forward.
That's right. And while it is free to listen, it's not free to produce. Those programs that you just listed, Tom, are some of our most expensive. The local programming is some of the most expensive to produce, but the listeners have made this service possible, and they've allowed us to be able to continue this and allow us to, for example, Behind the Headlines, take on that program after KCPW,
right,
unfortunately, wasn't able to continue their functioning. So, their name escaped me for a second.
KCPW,
That's right. And it's just that community support that allows us to continue, and it's really a backbone of the services that we're able to provide, from the shows, local shows like you're listening to right now, Access Utah, to the national programming, the NPR programming, some of the nationally produced shows from WNYC, WBUR, some the global programs from CBC and BBC. We're able to bring it from your own backyard to across the entire globe because of your support, and we want to be able to continue to do that. And with your support and your ability to sustain us to continue what we're doing, we can do that.
It's the hero story. If you take UPR, our entire community is the hero. We received a severe blow on our journey with the rescission, right, the loss of federal funding. But as a community, we've come together. It's beginning to look like a success story now, right?
Mm-hmm.
A happy ending, but the ending is far from certain still.
Yeah,
we're still on that journey. Very, very successful beginning after that blow, but and you probably have helped. We're asking you to help again with a little bit more to help the story end successfully, to help UPR become sustainable.
That's right. We want it to continue to be able to be a success story, and with your support and your continued support, we're able to do that, and you're able to help us get into 2026 with a good foot forward. So UPR.org is the place to go, or you can also call in 800-826-1495. We've got the phone lines open. We have our gift closet open. If you're here in town or in the area, we encourage you to come up and visit. Or if you're across the state as well, you can check it out on, I think we might have a picture up on Instagram of some of the things that we've got on our UPR gift closet. So anyway, that's UPR.org or 800-826-1495. Help us continue on into 2026.
You can help do some of your holiday shopping. Maybe somebody in your life is a UPR fan as well. $10 a month will get you into that UPR gift closet. Anything there, and you can give that as a gift as well. So UPR.org, UPR.org to help Utah Public Radio programs like Access Utah. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back with the final segment with Bob Inglis. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we're talking with Bob Inglis. He's a former Republican congressman from South Carolina. He's executive director of Republic EN, and they say that they're providing a conservative answer to climate change. They're proposing a carbon tax. We've been talking about that. We'll get into talking a little bit more about some of the ins and outs here of the conservative case for solving climate change. Here's the last part of my conversation. Here's another question on your FAQ, which I'll just ask it. Doesn't the war in Ukraine show that we still need fossil fuels? I guess the context here is presumably an effective carbon tax would incentivize moving to other sources of energy, right? We still need fossil fuels.
Clearly, we still need fossil fuels for a period of transition, without a doubt. And we're going to still use petroleum for a long time, for example, for some really good uses. You know, there are pharmaceuticals, there are plastics, there are things that really improve our lives. So we're going to need these resources. But I like to say that a lot better things to do with petroleum than burn it. We can make electricity other ways, and particularly here in Utah. Here today at Utah Clean Energy, I've been hearing about the amazing geothermal resource in Utah, and you talk about something that really could be exciting. Is exciting. It's already being done. It's not like this is in the future or something. It's happening right now. It's just expanding that and using it more. And then figuring out some way to sell that power to places that really are power impoverished, you know, like California and people like that. You could really have Utah making a great deal of money on this. And see, Tom, there's that's how we talk to conservatives. We're talking about making money here. We're talking about serving customers and creating wealth and jobs and money. Why not? That's what conservatives are. That's what we're excited about. So and capitalism is that system, where you make money by serving people. And so And that's the case with Utah and geothermal.
What about nuclear power? You Republican Ian in favor of that. In Utah, Governor Cox and other leaders are touting nuclear as being a necessary part of the picture.
Yeah, we agree that that is the case, because, you know, and that is something that's really changed. And this is where, some of your listeners may have seen the film Lit Nuclear Now. It's an Oliver Stone movie that basically takes another look at nuclear. And basically the point of the film, okay, it's a little bit preachy, but I like the sermon. So, the film says that that we scared ourselves with Three Mile Island. But if you look at look at it in cold, hard light, the burning of fossil fuels is way more dangerous and has killed way more people than nuclear power ever killed. It's a fallen world, and there are trade-offs, and there's a nuclear waste problem. Of course there is. But we can do that fairly safely. And if you compare it to other things, it's a pretty exciting thing to have emissionless power. And the thing I'm particularly excited about, Tom, is small modular reactors. We had a big project in South Carolina that has given us a $9 billion hole in the ground where the nuclear power plant was stopped. That's unfortunate. That's a bad deal. But if you can get these small modular nukes that can essentially come off something of an assembly line, not exactly an assembly line, but make them mass produced and small, we can deploy those around and do these data centers that need the power. And it's pretty exciting, really. And create a whole new industry, too. I mean, we can own that if we play this right as Americans. And again, make a lot of money and create wealth doing it.
So I can hear some listeners right now saying the problem, climate change, is so urgent that we need to throw everything at the wall. We need, carbon tax, regulation, incentives, anything we can think of, and right now. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, we need to do a number of things, but I would encourage people to go see something called En-ROADS, E-N, and then separate word, roads, as in roads and bridges. And it sounds like they're a wholly owned subsidiary or vice versa, but it's just that they saw the same thing, that En is a fun way to talk about energy, entrepreneurship, the environment, and create a new element on the periodic chart, EN. So En-ROADS is an MIT Sloan School of Business model where you can actually play it as a game. You can have teams, and you can say, what should we do about solving climate change? And there are various options you can choose in the game. And I'll tell all your listeners, Tom, how to win. If they choose the carbon tax first, you'll win, because it's the thing that most dramatically reduces emissions. You got to do some other stuff too, in order to solve the challenge of climate change. But this is the one that MIT's Sloan School of Business and that En-ROADS model will show is the one that most dramatically reduces emissions.
Tell me a little bit more about Utah and why you think Utah's, I guess, interest to you to sell this.
Well, a lot of it is Senator John Curtis. We got to know John when he was the mayor of Provo, and then we continued knowing him in the House, and now we know him in the Senate. And it was, we mentioned earlier, the creation of the Conservative Climate Caucus. That's somebody willing to speak about the issue. And so we're just very grateful for that leadership, and we want to be here in Utah, republican.org. We want to be here in order to help create that constituency of support that says, hey, this is, there are conservative answers to climate change. You can do this in a small government way. And really, for listeners who may be not right of center, but left of center, is really, this is the same thing that Al Gore's been for, as I said earlier, for about 30 years. That's why Utah, and we also, largely because of the leadership of Senator John Curtis, but also because of the winter inversion that I mentioned, that was our initially, even in coming to see John as the mayor of Provo, it was just the awareness that if you're living in Salt Lake City, it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or Democrat or whatever, it's you want something done about that air. And you realize that with four members of Congress, you don't exactly have the ability to run the country. So you need to somehow get the country behind this. And so we think that's why people like Senator John Curtis are out to do this, because they see the problem, they see the challenge, so they want to try to solve it. So that's why Utah. And in the case of, we were also in Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, that's because the water is coming up there, and that's a felt need there, you know, sea level rise. Indiana, because Senator Mike Braun, who's now governor of Indiana, was leading on climate in the Senate. And Iowa, because Marionette Miller Meeks is a member of Congress who took over the House Conservative Climate Caucus when John Curtis left to go to the Senate. So that's why we're in all those states. But we wish we had a couple more zeros on the end of our budget and we could be in all 50. But we've got to focus on certain states, and those are the ones we've chosen.
Just a couple minutes left. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I think here's something that maybe is important for people left of center to hear, is please include the right of center folks in the conversation. Up until now, the language of the left has been the language of the climate conversation. It's basically been, you know, let me exaggerate for a moment. Repent of the capitalistic system, walk and eat bugs, you know, shiver or sweat in the dark, depending on the season. Okay, those are all exaggerations, but that's how some right of center people have heard about climate, or the solutions that they've sensed that are out there. And so what we need to do is welcome them into the conversation by using their language. And especially, I would just implore anybody left of center to not think that climate is too good of a crisis to waste. You know, we have some people left of center who think everybody agrees on climate. Let's add some other stuff to the wagon. Let's put minimum wages or living wage on it, or let's do, I don't know, reparations for this or that. No, actually the wagon is sinking in the muck, because you load all those things on the wagon. You call it the Green New Deal. The wagon is stuck in the mud. So please get the weight off the wagon. Let's just try to get a price on carbon dioxide across the finish line, and then come back later and talk about, I don't know, union organizing in South Carolina. Well, good luck with that, because it's probably not going to work too well in South Carolina. But don't add that to the wagon. And so if I could just speak to left of center people, it's like, please welcome right of center people to the conversations. Understand there's a different language. Send them to our site, republican.org, so they can see it there. And then don't see it as an opportunity to, you know, implement your wish list of everything you ever wanted. Because the result will be that the wagon is stuck. We're not getting across the finish line.
Well, on Access Utah today, we've been talking with Bob Inglis. He's with Republican EN. You can find that at republican.org. Bob Inglis, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be with you.
And we appreciate the conversation with Bob Inglis. I recorded that on Thursday of last week when Bob Inglis was in Utah for some events. Again, republican.org is the place to find them. Appreciate that very interesting conversation. I'll note here that in about 3 minutes, if you're listening in the morning, top of the hour, TED Radio Hour, and a very familiar voice will appear, at least on the first segment, and that is Krista Tippett from On Being. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be fun to hear Krista Tippett again.
Yeah, it's a voice you haven't heard on UPR for, it's been about 2-3 years now since that program ceased production. But one of our old Sunday morning shows that we used to carry. So, yeah, that'll be fun.
And of course, if you know that name, you're very likely a big part of the Utah Public Radio community.
That's right.
We're coming together as a community right now in a special short year-end fund drive. to help make Utah Public Radio sustainable following the loss of federal funding.
That's right. We're facing a challenge we haven't faced in previous years. Federal funding for public media has been eliminated. In fact, we haven't, I think it's been decades since we haven't seen any federal assistance in that sort of manner. And so we're kind of in uncharted waters. We were in uncharted waters earlier this year. You helped steer the boat, and we're seeing some of the fog clear, but we just want to make sure that we're going down the right path, and that's where you come in, helping us sustain what we've been able to overcome and, you know, continue to be able to do what we do.
We are so grateful, so grateful. It's huge uncertainty, right, to immediate aftermath of rescission. You've come through in a big way. Thank you. Thank you so much. You have told us, you know, through your comments, when we talked to you directly on the phone, and, you know, hugely through your financial contribution, that you don't want to see this service fail, you value this service, that you want to see it become sustainable. So that's what we're trying to do here. We've the big influx of emergency funding. Thank you so much. But, of course, we'll face that that gap every year going forward, $200,000. And so we're just hoping that you can give just a little bit more here at the end of the year to help Utah Public Radio become sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll help us get some certainty into the future of, okay, we can continue to be able to fund these programs, we can continue to do these services, and that's because of your support. And we just want to be able to make sure that we can continue to do that, because times are a little bit uncertain. And we know not everyone can afford to donate right now, and that's okay. We hope you still continue to listen, but if you can donate right now, remember that you're also donating for everyone who can't. So every contribution helps. You can give today at upr.org, or you can call 800-826-1499. You can help keep us strong and help give us some certainty into the year of 2026.
And if you kick in at $10 a month, $120 for the year, to anything from our UPR gift closet, and you give those as gifts as well. UPR.org, UPR.org, and a big thank you.